myself a couple of the most incredible images that I have in my mind about the current economic crisis and food crisis that we face is that the people of Haiti were so poverty-stricken that they couldn't afford to buy food, and instead they were forced to eat mud cakes mixed with sugar to try to get a little bit of food. And in the meantime, of course, in the meantime in Europe, we have butter mountains that are being stored away. We have the destruction of large quantities of pigs and hogs in Canada and other countries, and we have the destruction of fruit trees in countries like Australia because of our agriculture can't support them. The other image that's in my... So on the one hand, we have the image of the third world where poor people in Haiti are forced to eat mud cakes because they can't get food. On the other hand, another image in my mind is of the way this economic crisis is also affecting the first world, the advanced world. I don't know how many people saw some time ago the pictures of burning houses in the United States, and I'm not talking about the California bushfires. People on the east coast of the United States were burning their houses in order to collect the insurance because they were going to lose their house because they couldn't afford to pay the mortgage. The only way they could save their position is to burn the house, obviously secretly. You get one of their mates to do it, yep, that's right. And somehow collect the insurance. I don't know how successful that strategy was, but otherwise they lost their house anyway. So this crisis that's affecting the world, the crisis of capitalism, modern capitalism, is affecting not only, and most severely, of course, the people of the third world, but it's also affecting advanced capitalist countries like the United States, first and foremost, and also Australia. So we've seen incredible situations like the bailouts of US banks and mortgage corporations that have been seen in the recent times. And we see a growing acceptance that there's now an economic recession in the US. Meanwhile, the way that it's affecting ordinary working class people in Australia is interest rate hikes. Now, people might have seen in the news the last couple of days that banks like St. George and other banks are putting their interest rates up, even though the Reserve Bank hasn't put their interest rate up. Hey, isn't that cheating? I thought, the theory was that the banks put their interest rates up when the Reserve Bank puts its interest rates up. Now they're sneaking that out and putting them on. And interest rates are up to 9.6. They're getting up towards 10%. This is like the so-called bad old days of Paul Keating. You know, the recession we had to have. So this is a horrendous situation, and it's affecting the people in the third world most severely, and it's a life and death question with millions of people being added to the poverty and the starvation situation every week in the third world. And on top of that, we have rocketing world oil prices and domestic petrol prices all over the world, and not in the third world, and also in countries like Australia, in Europe, and in the United States. So what this means is that the capitalist crisis is going through a serious global crisis today. We're seeing the effect through major international agencies like the International Monetary Fund, the World Bank, the United Nations, which called an emergency food crisis summit just recently, and of course that summit actually really resulted in no adequate measures at all. So we're seeing an intersection at the moment on a world scale of the global economic crisis coming first and foremost from the United States, the environmental crisis, and the crisis of the third world. There's now a global financial crisis turning into a global recession, beginning with the United States. And the reason for that, of course, is that the US is still by far the largest economy in the world and the biggest consumer economy. So basically, if the United States economy goes down, everyone else gets dragged down with it. There's a global food crisis where rapidly rising food prices have thrown 100 million more people into the UN and the Food Agriculture Organization starving or malnourished category. There are already something like a billion people, nearly a billion people, in that situation. Each of these crises is escalating, and each one is accentuating the other one, the economic crisis, the environmental crisis. So we're seeing how each one worsens the other. For example, as the pressure on oil supplies and the pressure on oil prices go up, the US's solution to that and Europe is this, well, the US has spent $100 billion a year encouraging the diversion of food production to biofuels, so that as we reach peak oil, the capitalist countries, instead of trying to change the whole basis of production so that it's based on renewable fuel, instead they're changing the basis of agriculture. Instead of producing food, now it's used to produce biofuel. So huge quantities of corn in the United States and North America is being used to fuel four-wheel drive cars. How crazy is that? This is an insane situation. And another example is when oil prices start shooting up. Many financial speculators and big oil companies saw an opportunity to make money. So they'll always try to make money out of each crisis. Global speculator George Soros estimates that speculation accounts for up to 60% of recent oil price rises. So because of the crisis in the capitalist economy, investors are looking for somewhere else to make a buck, and they're speculating on oil price rises. I think there's a futures market now in oil prices that's actually, there's some people put millions of dollars on fuel prices being $8 a litre very shortly. The other thing is that as oil prices rise, more and more rainforest, as well as previously food-producing agricultural land, is being cleared to plant crops like palm oil. In fact, there was a program that Kyle and I heard a bit of last night about the clearing of rainforest in Indonesia, I think, to plant palm oil. When they cleared it, millions of acres, they find out that it won't grow. Because, of course, the soil underneath rainforest, it's a very complex situation here. The soil is very poor. Most of the growth in rainforest comes from the forest floor, which is the leaves on the top. And this soil will not grow other things. So now they've got a massive erosion problem. So one problem mounts upon another. And we're having massive permanent forest fires raging in parts of the world as part of this forest clearing strategy. Of course, we know about the Amazon, but Australia is actually going to be one of the, as the CSIRO has pointed out, one of the most seriously affected by the coming global warming crisis. We all know about bushfires in this country, but the speculation is, and the prediction is that bushfires in this country are going to become worse, and the period between bushfires will become less, and the severity of those fires is becoming much more. People know that a recent report has just been released by the CSIRO saying basically that the Murray-Darling River system is almost gone. Almost gone. Has anyone been to the mouth of the Murray? Used to be really beautiful down there. Apparently there's not much water left. So our country is drying up. We are going to be affected. We think that, this is, you know, rising sea levels and so on is going to affect Kiribati and the Pacific Islands, but it's going to affect us too. So capitalism's inbuilt contradiction between the demands of private profit and social and environmental need are at the heart of all these intersecting global crises. And Marx himself, Karl Marx, pointed out that capitalism was not only a system that was a rapacious exploiter of human labour, but also was a plunderer of the Earth's resources. Capitalism has always generated crises, economic crises, right through its existence. But they've been in the form of cyclical booms and busts, and that is part of the actual structure of capitalism and how it works. But we're now entering a period where these booms and busts are going to become more and more severe, and each one's going to build upon the other. We also know from history, and this is the difficult part, because if we were to believe a simplistic view of Marxism, we'd think that, well, inevitably capitalism will collapse and the working class will take power and socialism will follow. It doesn't work like that. Capitalism has immense resilience and ability to recover and in a very brutal and savage way from its crises. It will survive if it is able to turn the crisis back on the working class and the working people of the world. That's essentially the situation we face. And essentially that is what has happened in the last few economic crises that we've faced in the post-war period and going back to the 1930s depression. The way in which capitalism was able to get out of that 1930s depression in particular was World War II, with the death of 100 million people. That was the savagery with which capitalism was able to recover and establish a new period of boom in the post-World War II period. Then that boom came to an end, and now we've seen an enormous attack on the rights of workers, not only in the First World, but most and foremost in the Third World over the last 20 to 30 years. So-called neoliberalism, that's a bizarre term in my view. It's actually reaction in the most. It's a reactionary philosophy. It attacks all the most basic rights and the property of the people. So what's happened under neoliberalism over the last 20 years, 30 years, we've seen the turning back of all the minor gains that the working class and people in the Third World have managed to gain. State property has been totally decimated. State property in Australia, well, we don't have to talk about Telstra. You know, the most important asset the Australian people had was Telstra, control of our own telecommunications industry. It's a crime, as someone like Mike could attest to, being a Telstra worker, that we've lost any form of social control of that. All over the world, these assets have been sold off to the capitalists and the big corporations. And on the basis of that, over the last 20 years, we've seen capitalism attempt to re-establish itself. That was added to with the collapse of the Soviet Union at the beginning of the 1990s, which also dealt another setback to the workers' movement internationally. So the question is, with this new multifaceted crisis that's coming on, the economic crisis, the global meltdown, the climate change disaster that is facing us, according to all the science that we have at the moment, how will capitalism try to get out of this? How will capitalism try to turn this back on the working people and manage to survive? It seems on the face of it to be almost impossible, but it can do that, but it will have to do it at enormous cost to the peoples of the world. So this is the problem that faces the people of the world at the moment, and this is the problem that socialists have to find solutions to and be able to not only find solutions to, but we have to be able to explain those solutions to the broad masses of the working people in Australia and in the Third World. So what's happened most recently? We haven't had a major world recession in quite the way that we're looking at the moment for some time. We had the so-called Asian recession of the 1990s, which was focused mainly in the Asian area, but it had ramifications. But now, with the US going into recession, that is going to drag the whole world into a serious economic crisis. The years of neoliberal offensive have restructured all the economies of the Third World toward exporting to the US and other rich Western countries. So the domestic markets and the state industries of so many Third World countries, which had in the period, post-war period, as part of the struggle of the people for the anti-colonial struggle, they very often had built up state industries. If you even look at Latin America, you know, there's substantial state industries in countries like Argentina and Brazil and so on, which are now being decimated and handed over to the rich corporations. So the fact that the fact that these countries are now more beholden to the United States and to the wealthy world than ever. So any idea that we live in a post-colonial world is an absolute fantasy. Actually, the real structure of colonialism has deepened under this new neoliberal order. The dependency of the economies of the third world, overwhelmingly in relation to the first world, has actually increased. Now, when the US economy slips further into recession, which is exactly happening more and more at the moment, we're going to see that travel all around the world. And even in Australia, where we're told that, well, Australia will be shielded from the international economic crisis to some extent because we are based on the China boom. We're selling all our commodities, especially minerals and so on, to China, and China's running at 10% a year economic growth and doesn't seem to be any problem, so we're okay. Well, that's also a fantasy. That's not going to happen. The Chinese economy will also be affected by the US and international system because China depends on exporting to the United States, very importantly, for its manufacturing industry. It also depends on exporting to Europe. And Europe will be dragged down by the United States, so it's going to have a serious effect on China and will come through to Australia. What we are seeing now, and this is starting to perhaps lead on to the questions that Paul is going to talk about, is a crisis of the legitimacy of market solutions. The crisis of neoliberalism, and I think that's already begun in Australia. I think an example of the crisis of neoliberalism and the crisis of the privatisation drive in this country is seen in particular in New South Wales at the moment with the massive public opposition to the privatisation of the power industry there. And that is starting to intersect with the question of opposition to or demand for action, serious action to be taken around climate change. There's a very interesting, I'm going to pass around for people's information, if I can find it, a reading guide, but you can't read it, you don't need to read it now, but if people are interested, I think these are some really good articles to read, and the ones I've chosen are actually ones that are relatively easily accessible, because they're all either articles from Green Left Weekly, featured in Green Left Weekly over the last couple of months, or they're in Lynx Magazine. Now, I really want to give a plug here, right here and now, for Lynx Magazine. People may not have seen it as a publication in recent times, but if you look up the website for Lynx, just Google it. It's got some really fantastic articles. If you want to follow up the whole question of the world economic and environmental crises, then have a look at Lynx Magazine, and in that list I've actually mentioned some of those important articles, and one that's just appeared on Lynx Magazine, which I have here but I haven't had it really a chance to summarise for you, but it's a fantastic magazine, The Crisis of the World Economy, which is a report of the Institute of Globalisation and Social Movements from Moscow. And actually it's a very interesting report, and it indicates that Marxism is not yet dead in Russia. They're working away in some of the institutes. There must be the remains of the old Marxist academics and theoreticians. It's a very substantial analysis of the world economic crisis and relationship of the Russian economy to the US economy. There's also some really good reports from John Bellamy Foster, who people would have heard if you came to the recent Climate Change Social Change conference that was held in Sydney, and also Patrick Bond from South Africa, who also spoke. Those articles are all in Green Left Weekly. I really urge people to get a hold of them. But I might finish up by quoting from or referring to something that was recently published in Lynx, because the committee of the world major capitalist countries is called the G8. That's the meeting of the big eight capitalist countries, well, there are moves at the moment to try and expand it to bring in a few more. But that's where they're supposed to sort of talk about their problems and come up with solutions. Well, the recent G8 meeting in Japan actually came up with nothing, absolutely nothing. On the climate change issue, it was actually a retreat from what was going in Bali, in the Bali meeting. And it appears that the leading capitalists in the capitalist countries, especially under the leadership of, lame duck leadership of George Bush, that nothing can be really done on a world scale in terms of the economy or the climate or anything until there's a new president in the United States. And then, of course, the debate would be what might come out of that in any case. So, to summarise the situation that we face at the moment, we have an intersection of a global climate crisis, which we're all very much aware of, and I haven't gone into that in great detail because we've had recent forums on that and many people know about that. The Garneau report, we could discuss the Garneau report if you wish in the discussion. The one thing you can say about the Garneau report is that while it draws attention to a certain extent to the severity of the problem, the fundamental proposal in the Garneau report is a complete fantasy. It says that we can rely on the market. We can rely on the capitalist market to get us out of this mess. And the whole fundamental proposal that's been put forward of relying on global emissions trading as a mechanism to solve the climate crisis is a complete fantasy. But underlying all that problem is the fact that, as I said, the US is seriously dipping into recession, and you might have seen just in the newspaper today, actually, that the US Reserve Bank has been forced to do what they're not supposed to do, which is bail out major corporations. According to the neoliberal theory, you're not supposed to bail out corporations, you're supposed to let the market take its course. But this is too big. In the US you have groups called Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, which sounds like a couple of cartoon characters, but actually, believe it or not, that is the name of the two major mortgage corporations that I presume they must be a bit like Rams or something. I don't know what they are. They're not banks.
They're mortgage securities.
I don't know what the equivalent organisations would be in Australia. Those carry like I think it's 60% or something of the mortgages.
Well, the banks sell them the mortgage and then they sell them to investors.
Yeah.
Now, an element of the US mortgage crisis, which people might want to talk about, which I hadn't been aware of until I read this, but I had thought this was the case, but I've never seen it referred to, that a good proportion, people should realise, of these mortgages that have gone bust are black Americans. They are the poorest people. We all knew that was probably the case, but I hadn't actually seen it actually referred to. But of course, they are the poorest people. You've got to remember what happened there, that in order to find homes for capital and to create expansion, some of these organisations, banks in the US and these Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac were actually offering people, it doesn't actually happen in Australia, that's probably why it hasn't gone quite as far in this country, offering people 100% mortgages.
Oh, they have done so.
Have they?
Yeah, they have.
Okay. Oh, well, I thought there were rules that meant they weren't able to do that. But
you couldn't get a loan off a bank when I was a young woman. And John Lennon said, women are the niggers of the world.
All right. So now women can get a loan and they can go into mortgage stress as well. So there's progress. This is absolutely bizarre, and so the failure of these mortgages, the failure to be able to pay these mortgages, which are at enormous interest rates and escalating interest rates, means, of course, that you've got an enormous flaw at the centre of the US speculative economy at the moment. Okay, so just to finalise, the intersection of the world economic meltdown is starting from the United States and spreading out towards the rest of the world. With the climate change crisis means that we are really going into a serious crisis in the next period. Those two, it is hard to see that under capitalism it is possible to escape from those, for those intersecting crises. However, we must be aware, and this is perhaps what Paul will be talking about in the second part, that the people of the world have begun to fight back against these attacks, and but in the end, unless we find a socialist solution, unless we're able to build an international socialist solution to actually take power out of the hands of the capitalist class, then they will succeed in imposing solutions against our own interests on us. So, okay, I'll leave it there. Thank you very much.